Citizen Cuckoo. Colonel Berg. Are you Colonel or Lieutenant Colonel?
Oh, I'm Colonel.
That's what I thought.
For another 2 months, and then I'm Colonel retired. Chief Judge Jones, Judge Higginbotham, Judge Smith, thank you for having us here. My name is Tom Berg, and I represent Oliver Nkuku. He was tried before Judge Hughes and a jury back in Houston and convicted for health care fraud. We're here on three issues, two issues related to what I contend are trial error and the admission of evidence, and probably the more significant issue for purposes of argument, some real confusion over what was meant by intended loss in this case in determining an appropriate sentence. So with your permission, I would like to address that third issue first. The court initially stated that it was going to rely on the amount billed of roughly $1.1 million as the basis for determining the guideline application under 2B1.1, which is the fraud guideline. Defense objected to that, contending that the court needed to take into consideration that there was always an understanding that in the amount billed, there was at least a 20% cap imposed by Medicare itself. In fact, that was in the evidence at the trial, that not only was there a cap, but it was the government's argument as evidence of Mr. Nkuku's intended fraud that he would never intend to try and collect the additional 20%, which was actually a copay, that in a legitimate circumstance would be the responsibility of the beneficiary of whatever was given. For example, if you had a $5,000 wheelchair that was to be provided under a proper prescription, Medicare would pay $4,000 back to the supplier, and the beneficiary would be responsible for the other 20% or the other $1,000. In order, according to the government, to make this fraud work, Ms. Nkuku would represent to the individuals, I can get you a free wheelchair. Mr. Nkuku would then be entitled to collect the $4,000 from Medicare, but he would never bill the beneficiary for the balance of it, because then the beneficiary would go complain to Medicare, saying, I was told I would get a free one, and now they want $1,000. The government, in fact, argued that in closing, that that was the essence of it. So what it means is that 20% was never an intended loss, and the vast majority of the amount attributed to Mr. Nkuku in this case for loss purposes was related to what were called the Cadillac items, the expensive wheelchairs and the scooters. I believe the evidence was that roughly 83% of all the billings were related to these big ticket items. And so what that means is if you're looking at a $1.1 million total billing and 83% of that was the big ticket items, well, then it's only 80% of that 83% results in what was actually intended loss.
Are you sure the court used the full 100%, not just the 80%?
It's not clear. The judge at one point says, I'm going to use $1.1 million. But then he starts moving about, I think he even called it triangulating, because I think at one point he dropped down to $900,000. But he was doing this in the course of trying to figure out an appropriate sentence, also taking into account Mr. Nkuku's criminal history category. At one point he said he's more like a 2.5 than a 2, or maybe a 3. But he never makes on the record his findings. We don't have an inkling what those are. We do get later on after sentencing a statement of reasons.
Well, and he used the lower offense level of 28, right?
Well, I will say that he did not, because I don't think the statement of reasons is a sentencing. I think his obligation is as stated on the record at the time of sentencing. The statement of reasons itself is a data collection form, as I indicated in my reply brief, that simply goes to the Sentencing Commission for statistical purposes, and it's prepared by the probation office. It is signed by the judge, but the probation office fills that out. And I think they sometimes do it, especially with Judge Hughes, to make a square peg fit into a round hole after the sentencing has occurred. But this is clearly not what he said on the record at the trial in public before the accused. So I don't think that we can rely on the statement of reasons to justify anything, because that's not the purpose of the document, and it certainly didn't occur in the presence of Mr. Nkuku or his defense lawyer.
Were you trial counsel?
I was not. No, I came in on the appeal. There was a Ms. Quinones who was the trial lawyer in this case. And
what would the difference in offense level have been?
I think had this been correctly calculated, and I'm also taking into account this court's recent opinion in Isiwele, I-S-I-W-E-L-E, which I cited in my brief. It's at 635 Fed 3rd 196. I think the correct amount would have been between $400,000, but clearly less than $1 million.
Well, what I'm saying is the sentencing range. What's the difference in the sentencing range? I mean, the judge departed upward. So,
well, he doesn't say he does a departure until we see that in the statement of reasons, because he doesn't say I'm departing upward in the course of the actual sentencing proceeding. He just comes up with 120 months mm-hmm. without
that's
stating
within the range as calculated with the lower 28 figure, is it not?
It is, but we don't know that that's how he figured it out. I would come up with a level 26 myself. Okay. And so I think it's lower.
Okay. You want us just to remand and tell him to state his reasons?
Well, I think he's got to, not only state his reasons, I think that he's got to take into account the Isiwele case, which says while the billed amount is prima facie evidence, it is subject to rebuttal. And in this case, the record is replete with rebuttal evidence, which indicates that a lesser amount is appropriate. So I think in hindsight, and of course he kind of fired a shot across the bow in the sentencing, he thought that that was a clever argument for the Court of Appeals, that Medicare really only means 80% rather than 100% of the amount billed. And that was, let's see if I can get this back up on my screen, I'll tell you where the record site was where he said that. Okay, it's at 504 in the electronic record and page 32 of the sentencing record. It's an interesting piece of logic for the Court of Appeals that everybody knows Medicare doesn't pay what it is billed to pay, so that everybody knows that they are fudging on their responsibility, or they're saying all doctors and suppliers are at least 20% crooks, which is
one way to put it.
One way to put it. But it's also incorrect, because when we look at Isiwele and when we look at the evidence in this case, that in fact is the situation. It was the government's theory that Mr. Nkuku never intended to collect that additional 20%. That was evidence of his intent to commit the fraud with the balance, the other 80%. So I think what we have to do is remand this case on the sentencing for him to make the correct findings on what is actually the intended loss. He's got to make his justification. If he intends an upward departure as opposed to a variance, it's got to be on the record in the presence of the defendant so that we have a clear record if there is to be an appeal. And we cannot rely on the statement of reasons for the reasons I stated in my reply brief. It is simply a statistical collection document, and it's not part of the record of this trial.
We have your argument.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal.
Yep, thank you. Ms. Collery?
Good morning. May it please the Court, Liza Collery on behalf of the United States. I will also start with the sentencing issue. In the government's view, the only sentencing issue that's actually before the court is the appropriateness of the upward departure that Judge Hughes used in this case based on the defendant's commission of a second fraud offense after a prior mail fraud conviction. The record before the court, which appropriately includes the statement of reasons appended to the judgment, makes clear that the defendant won on the issue of the amount of the fraud, the amount of the intended loss. That is, that Judge Hughes assigned a 14-level, not a 16-level increase based on a loss amount of between $400,000
and... What was the prior conviction for?
It was a mail fraud conviction. The defendant, Nkuku, convinced some women who worked for a company in the billing department to send checks, essentially, to addresses where he collected them and cashed them, worth about $60,000 worth of fraud. So he essentially prevailed upon employees of a company to steal from the company and send the proceeds to him.
Being convicted of mail fraud doesn't bear on your ability to become a provider under Medicare?
Yes, Your Honor. But it was not disclosed. The existence of this offense was not disclosed on his application, and that was part of the government's.
I wasn't expecting to, but I guess there's no background check or anything.
Unfortunately, not, Your Honor.
So he clips people for $1 million.
The loss amount was.
I think it called the taxpayers get clipped for $1 million.
I'm not going to argue with you about that, Judge Higginbotham. I was also distressed by what I read in the record of this case. So the loss amount was, the actual loss was about $450,000, but there was over $1 million of claims submitted. But it is clear that in the end, although there was much debate about this at the sentencing transcript, in the end, Judge Hughes adopted the defendant's position that the amount of the claims submitted should be discounted by 20% because the government only reimburses 80% of the claim. And so the loss amount that was actually used by the judge was the loss amount the defendant requested, which was under $1 million. At the same time, the judge made clear at sentencing his intent to depart upward on the basis of the defendant's criminal history category underrepresented his criminality. This court has already concluded in the De Luna Trujillo case that that kind of upward departure is appropriate, where the defendant, having been convicted once of the same kind of offense, subsequently commits the
second. He's not arguing that, I think. I think the point is, though, if you do an upward departure as opposed to a variance, you have to set forth the base level of the guidelines that's applicable so you know how much a departure is.
Right, and the district court has done that, although I agree that the transcript of the sentencing itself is somewhat confusing because the district, both of these issues were in play. The question of an upward departure and the question of the loss amount were extensively debated below. And everybody had an opportunity to get their positions on the record. And I agree that at the time sentencing was imposed, it was somewhat unclear whether the judge was relying on the upward departure or whether he was relying on the loss amount. But the subsequent statement of reasons made perfectly clear what the district court did in this case.
What do you do with this statement? Having considered the 900,000 loss level at a 2 and a 3 and a 1,000,001 and 2 and 3, I think from those four fixes,
right,
I can infer, deduce, approximate the appropriate sentence.
That's right. I mean, that's
so what level was he considering?
If you look at the statement of reasons, it makes perfectly clear that he ultimately departed upward and used a level 28. The defendant now contends in his reply brief.
Is it clear in the statement of reasons that he went to 28 at a level?
Yes. It says right there in the statement of reasons, level 28. The defendant now contends that the statement of reasons is somehow not part of the sentencing record, and that is simply incorrect. 18 U.S.C. 3553 requires the district court to record his reasons. And that's not just for purposes of collecting statistics. That's for purposes of appellate review and to create a record about the sentencing. This court and other appellate courts frequently look at the statement of reasons for evidence regarding the sentencing. And that is part of the record of the sentencing. It's also very important, I think, to note that the defendant's claim that the record at sentencing was unclear is subject at best to plain error review. We argue in our brief that the claim has been waived altogether because it's not sufficiently articulated in the defendant's opening brief. But if the court disagrees with us, in any event, the claim is subject to plain error review. And in order to prevail under a plain error standard, the defendant needs to demonstrate some kind of prejudice. He's not prejudiced in any way in this case. He won on the issue of the loss amount. The record is clear as to how his sentence was calculated, and so he's got every opportunity to bring his sentencing claims before the Court of Appeals. And there's no reason to believe that if Judge Hughes had been more clear at sentencing, the sentence itself would have been in any way different, which is what the defendant needs to prove in order to demonstrate prejudice under the plain error standard. Although the defendant doesn't address it in his reply brief, we made it quite clear in our own brief that we thought that the plain error standard applied. And so I assume that he's conceding that that, you know, very difficult burden is imposed on him. That is, the burden of demonstrating that some problem at the sentencing hearing has actually caused him real prejudice, and that the court should, at this point, intervene to correct some kind of injustice in this case.
If there had been an offense level of 26, what would the guidelines range be?
If it had been 26, Your Honor, it would have been, and there had been an upward departure?
No, just what would the range have been?
If it had been 26 and his criminal history category had been a 2, mm-hmm. the range would have been 70 to 87 months.
70 to 87.
But and there, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
With a 28, it's 90-something to 121, right?
87 to 108.
87 to 108. Okay.
There's no way to get to a 26 in this case. I heard defense counsel say he calculated a 26, but I don't know how he gets there. He hasn't challenged any of the enhancements that get to a 28. It's a 6-level base offense level, and then the court added 14 levels, which was what the defendant asked for the magnitude of the loss. And then there was another, I think, 8 levels of enhancements. There was a 2-level enhancement because it involved fraud involving a natural disaster. There was a 4-level enhancement because he was the leader of the offense. And there was a 2-level enhancement for sophisticated means. So I don't understand how we could get to a 26 in any event. And the district court clearly used 28, which the defendant's not contesting. So in my mind, that leaves only the issue of whether the upward departure was appropriate. And this court's already found that this sort of upward departure is appropriate. So if the court doesn't have any more questions about the sentencing issues, I'd be happy to address the evidentiary issues if the court has any questions about those issues. Otherwise, I think the government will rest.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe you could tell us how you get to 26.
Well, if this goes back, the guidelines are dynamic. They've changed again, and some of the some of the things that were included before have dropped out. There is now a trigger. If the offense actually is over $1 million but involved health care fraud, then there's a +2, which otherwise doesn't apply. But the +2 that was applied initially for having relation to a natural disaster has fallen out of the calculation. So it would actually be at a 26 if it goes back on remand. But I do not concede that it's plain error. I think the objections were made by the trial counsel below. The judge never made the findings that he was required to make. That's what Gall says that you've got to do before you do anything else, is you have to make the correct findings on the record. It doesn't say that you make them 6 or 7 days later on a piece of paper that says not for public disclosure, that goes to the Sentencing Commission for statistical collection. It says it's on the record. That's where we do sentencing, and it's the sentencing which controls over anything that's ever written in terms of a judgment. It didn't happen in this case, and that's the reason it has to go back. And if the judge intends to make an upward departure, then he's got to state the reasons why. We have him speculating he's between a 2 and a 3 and a 2.5, but he doesn't pinpoint why Category 2 is insufficient for the man who has only one conviction in his life, why 3 is inadequate, and why you have to go higher. So in the absence of those required things that he is to do as a sentencing judge, even if he doesn't like the guidelines, and it's apparent he says he does not like the guidelines, he still has to do those particular things before he can then either upwardly depart or impose a variance. And he's got to state the reasons on the record in open court in the presence of the accused. It didn't happen. So for those reasons, we think it has to go back.
Okay. We have your argument.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did you put your statement of reasons in the record excerpts? His statement, I just want, because I was leaping through trying to recover them here, and anyway, I didn't see it, but whatever. Just for future.
Report a copy.
Well, we've got it in the electronic record.
I think I referred to it as loose in the papers because it's a document under seal.
Uh-huh. Maybe that, I don't know. Okay, thank you.